envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insights. Tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Disclaimer: this podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future. Hey, everybody. It's your favorite lawyers and we're back. It's your girl, Brandy. And I have, of course, Houston's best lawyers back with y'all to bring some juicy topics. We are out of our Quarantine Chronicles series, and we're going back into our regular scheduled program, but we're still doing it virtual. So we hope everybody is safe and still being masked up and gloves up, despite what the Texas governor has stated. But let's do our introductions. Let's go to Sam, because she's over there cheesing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys, this is Sam Frage. How's everyone doing? I hope you are masking and gloving.
And let's go to T Hutch. What's going on?
Hi, guys. It's Taria. I still haven't seen my hairstylist, so this is still just me. Maybe I don't need to go back.
Lies. You'll be back.
I will be back.
I definitely need to go back. Like, please open it up.
Yeah, because this is looking a little rough over here. These edges and this kitchen, it ain't too good. Well, as always, so since we are kind of out of the Quarantine Chronicles, but still living the quarantine life, we're wanting to do something different. We're wanting to talk about, have we ever talked about healthcare yet? Have we done a healthcare show? We're talking about health?
No.
First one, not a part
first
two?
First one.
It's the first time for everything.
Yeah. So we're talking about, which this topic actually came about. This is one of Sam's babies. She's been, you know, beating this one to a dead horse. So this is about healthcare advocacy and why it's important. And dealing with the coronavirus, COVID-19, you're starting to see, especially since it's big in the Black community, you see a lot of people that tend to get turned around. They're sick or have symptoms and they're being turned around, and then either them or a loved one has passed away. So we wanted to talk about advocating for yourself in the healthcare. And we brought on two of Houston's finest to our show. I'm have them introduce themselves. We're gonna start with our RN nurse. Go ahead and just let everybody know who you are and just give a brief background of you.
Thank you. My name is Monique Lamo. I'm an original New Jersey girl, transplanted here in Texas.
Transplant!
I'm from New Jersey all the time. I am a nurse. I've been a nurse for about 9 years now. I went right into cardiothoracic ICU, which I did for 6 years. I travel nursed in Georgia and in California for about 2 years. And then 3 years ago, I took a position here where I am working as a lung transplant nurse coordinator. So I went from the bedside recovering open heart surgery patients as well as heart and lung transplant patients. And now I'm working out of the bedside, but outpatient with lung transplant patients prior to them being transplanted. So I have both the experience inpatient and outpatient, and I'm just excited, you know, to be here because I'm really passionate about nursing.
So how are that's great, Monique. I think that's wonderful.
Are you having to go into work every day? Like, are you, since you are like a lung, dealing with the lungs, but are you dealing with the COVID virus as well, like a lot of those patients?
So not directly. Interestingly enough, we're still doing transplants, but I work outpatient, so I do clinic. It's been a change now, so we're actually doing a lot of virtual appointments now, so that's kind of been a different change. They did give us an opportunity to work from home about 2 days a week or so I did that for about a month, but this Friday is my last my last day being able to work from home since Abbott has opened up and said that we can do elective procedures in surgeries now, as long as we keep 15% of the capacity of the hospital set aside for COVID patients, that we're kind of opening up back more. So I've been mainly at the hospital, but I have had the opportunity to work from home at some point, but it's going back 100% next week.
So we're gonna talk
about what else you're doing, Monique. What else are you doing?
I'm in school. I just finished my first, I actually have one more exam, but this Wednesday, I'll finish my first year in acute care nurse practitioner. Doing that.
Nice.
Super excited about expanding, you know, my knowledge and just growing more as a nurse.
Come through, Black Girl Magic.
Monique, I'm kind of like a healthcare professional. I have watched all of the seasons of Grey's Anatomy. So if you need me to help you.
With all the pharmacology meds that I had to study, and I went through there with me last night, but don't worry, I will call you in the next
Me. And I've watched every single season since it first started, so I'm basically a doctor. So
that's how we say about the people that watch How to Get Away with Murder. They're lawyers.
Oh,
no.
baby, that's not me, it.
You try to step in her lane. But Monique, mm-hmm. We'll definitely talk more about you just providing us about, like you said, Governor Abbott opened up for the healthcare profession to do more. And I want you to talk about that later on what it's going to look like, you know, what to expect when going to see your doctor, going into the hospital. So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, it's definitely different.
And we also have with us one of the best MedMal attorneys, but she's also a jack of all trades. And she's a friend of the host of our podcast. So I want her to introduce herself and let everybody tell our listeners who you are.
Hi, I'm Shamira Keener. I have a background in both defending and pursuing medical malpractice claims. So here to answer your questions about that. And yeah, I'm excited about this podcast. Thank y'all for having me on. This is really cool, really neat.
Yeah, and tell them where you went to school.
I went to South Texas College of Law. I'll be teaching health law this summer. So
nice.
Oh, nice.
Enroll in the class.
Professor right. Keener.
Professor Keener.
Okay. Another Black
Adjunct
Girl Magic.
Professor.
You got to step that up. Black Girl Magic.
For now. Maybe 10 years later.
Right. Let's look. We're going to claim that. So let's go right into healthcare advocacy. So basically, we're going to have a discussion. You know, feel free for either one of y'all to answer the question, you know, to elaborate on the question. Actually, I would like for both of y'all to answer the question because we want to hear from it from a healthcare side and from the legal side, from the attorney side. So when we talk about healthcare advocacy, what is it and like what does it look like? Because a lot of people don't know what that means. And when you hear advocacy, you either hear legal, like it's something legal, or I need to go on the picket line and fight for my rights. Okay. So whoever want to go first, both of y'all take a stab at it. But tell me, what is healthcare advocacy? And why is it so important to me?
I'll start if that's okay, Shamira. To me, healthcare advocacy and being an advocate is placing the patient at the center, and any decisions that are being made are with the patient in mind, but also involving the patient. I always think of being as the patient's like primary main advocate. My job is to make sure that whatever is being done for the patient is being done in the patient's best interest. And if the patient is, not for something or is confused or does not want to do something or is just concerned about it, I'm the one that's going to speak up for that patient. And when you think of a person being an advocate for themselves, is being able to speak up and let their desires and their wants and their needs being known. And that to me is, you know, being the best part of being an advocate.
Okay. Well, from a legal standpoint, Shamira, like what is a healthcare advocacy and why is it important?
So from a legal standpoint, I think it's putting the information in the patient's hand. If they've been wronged by a healthcare professional, how can we make sure that we help them to become as whole as possible? So whether it's, you know, you knowing an attorney who practices medical malpractice, who has you know, years of experience in it, so that it's not some novice attorney who doesn't know how to, the difference between a, you know, personal, a regular personal injury claim and then the uniqueness of a medical malpractice claim. I think it's being a competent attorney and putting information in the patient's hands so that they can not only advocate for themselves, but you can advocate for them as well.
So what if, like, okay, for instance, my mom has to go to the hospital or has to go to the doctor. And, you know, she keeps complaining about a pain in her back and they're running tests and they're like, oh, just take some ibuprofen, you'll be fine. But I'm over here like, no, there's something wrong with my mama. I may not be a nurse. I don't have a medical background, but there's really something wrong with my mama and she's not ready to take Advil, Aleve, you know, whatever, 500, 800 milligram ibuprofen, but her back is still hurting, but they're not listening to me. So like, what do I do? Like, can I be an advocate for her because she's in pain and things like that? And I'm telling them, hey, she's in pain. Somebody need to listen to me, but they're trying to send us home. So then like, how do you deal with that situation?
And that's in the hospital?
Hospital, doctor's office, like in the clinic,
mm-hmm. In the hospital, one thing that I always tell patients, I tell my family members, I tell them, you know, all the time, I don't know about all hospitals, but majority of the hospitals, they have someone called the patient advocate. So if there's a test that's been done and the results are not back yet, or they're having pain and they're not seemingly getting answers, the first person I would get in contact with would be asking for is for the patient advocate for the hospital, because their whole primary position is to be there to get answers and to get results for the patient. I tend to tell patients as well, and you know, my family, if it's right at the bedside and the nurse isn't helping or the nurse isn't kind of assisting, ask for the charge nurse and level it up. If the charge nurse is not assisting, not helping, ask for the manager. The manager is not assisting and helping, ask for the director, ask for the house supervisor. You just keep making noise. Everyone should know. The housekeeper should know that you're not, you know, being helped or being, I'm serious, because a lot of times, especially as minorities, there's an intrinsic bias among health, among physicians and among healthcare professionals. And a lot of times they may just already have these internal stereotypes that are coming up. They're so used to, you know, not listening. And doctors and, you know, physicians, healthcare workers, they are human. And the same stereotypes that they may have outside of the hospital, they're going to have that inside the hospital as well, too. And so to overcome that, you have to make noise. And I tell everyone all the time, you have to make noise. Someone has to listen to you. And until they do, just keep making the noise. As far as outpatient, I always tell patients to always just be informed. If someone's not listening to you there, if it's a practice, try to get in contact with another physician that's there. Try to, I'm always for second, third, fourth opinions. If you're not getting the answers that you need there, go to get another opinion. I had a surgery and I do my due diligence. I do my research. And if you feel that you're not being heard there, find someone who is going to listen to you.
And I'll just add to what Monique said. A lot of the records I reviewed, they include whether the mom or the husband or the wife is complaining about something as well into the record. So if you raise those concerns and they're in the records, that really helps your case should it go into medical malpractice. And they'll see daughter continued to raise concerns about X, Y, and Z, and it was ignored. So I say keep raising the question. Make sure it's in the record. Like, say, are you writing this down? Are you, hey, like she said, keep complaining so that it's in the record. So when it does get to an attorney and to an expert to review it, they say, hey, this patient did raise concerns about this. They continue to say that their pain levels, you know, didn't decrease or anything like that. It only helps your case when you're complaining. Like you said, not being a jerk, but at least making sure that someone has heard it.
And I was going to say, you know, us as people, depending upon what does a proper complaint look like? Because going back to Brandy's hypothetical, this is my mama. So if my mama is over here crying, it's not going to be, excuse me.
no, it's not going to be. No.
Nurse, you're going to probably get one Miss Nurse Monique.
Yes.
And then after that, it's not going to be that.
It's going to be like, excuse me.
Right.
You hear me calling you.
Get the charge nurse.
Yes.
But we also have to understand what is a proper way to assert that without just becoming irate, because there are some people who get put out of the hospital trying to advocate. And although their concerns may be valid, their behavior is criminal or close to where the healthcare professionals cannot even identify what the problem is, because the person's behavior has become just out of control. So what is the proper way to assert those complaints?
I try to, and I'm just seeing from the nurse side, because a lot of times when patients are in pain, when, you know, the family member's in pain, I try to make sure that I understand where they're coming from. And remember that just like you're upset about your mom, I don't want my mother in pain. And I want to make sure that, one, that the patient is being heard, that I understand, you know what, this sucks. You know, this sucks. Your mom's in pain. We're not able to control it. I need to find out and listen from the family member and from the patient what's going on. I do think that you will get more, you know, you'll get more bees with honey than you would with vinegar. And so it's not a matter of bowing down or anything, but just remember what the end goal result is. The end goal result for you is to make sure that your mother is comfortable and to make sure that you're getting the information that you need. And so sometimes we do have to simmer down. We do have to, you know, bite our tongue, because we don't want security coming. You know, we don't want to cause a whole ruckus. You don't want to, you know, get things flying in the office. So I think that if patients just keep in mind what the end goal is, calmly, and say, you know, this is where I'm being disappointed in, this is where I have concern for, and kind of rationalize, you'll be able to be heard more than if you're just, you know, turning up.
How soon can a patient obtain his or her records? Because I think that that's the other important part. If there is a valid claim, I'm going to say valid, but I think everybody thinks that their claims are valid, but there is a difference between invalid and valid claims. So how soon in the hospital realm can a patient get their records, or a patient's family members get their records?
They should, I'm not sure about what when they're inpatient, but as soon as they're discharged, you can contact the medical records office and be able to get the records. One thing that it is good, I would still get the whole official medical records, is the MyChart, where a lot of facilities, they have MyChart, where you do have access to testing, to lab work. Sometimes you have access to other information. Probably won't have it from the notes. You'll have to get that from medical records. But I believe as soon as you get out of the hospital that you can go to medical records requested, and they should get them to you within 2 weeks. I could be wrong, but they should get it fairly quickly.
So then, how often are people misdiagnosed? Like, have you, like, in a year? And what is the, I guess, the demographics of it too? Like, is it more, well, how often are people misdiagnosed? And are you seeing it more within the African-American community, the Caucasian community, you know, the Hispanic or the Asian community? Like, what have you seen?
Have you seen? I
don't
know if
you want to. Based on an article I saw, it's about 12 million per year. I don't know the specific demographics. Yeah. And it's one of the leading
misdiagnosis.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, it's one of the leading causes for medical malpractice claims. Some doctors misstep. Some, no offense, some nurses may missteps. Like down the chain, there's so many medical professional levels where if there's a miss in communication, it could ruin someone's life. So,
ooh, right. I have a story about that real quick, just to kind of make it real. So I was diagnosed in law school. I had a blood clot in my lung. And when I first went to the doctor, I couldn't breathe. And I went to the doctor, and first I went to the ER. They told me it was gallstones, and I went by myself. And then they gave me like this pain medication. It did not really help, still couldn't breathe. Went back to my primary care physician, but my mom decided to go this time. Mm-hmm. And when my mom went, my mom kept saying, you know, such and such daughter, she had a blood clot. And I just really think that they should just give you a CT scan. And obviously my mom is like, I'm an only child, so she's always over the top. She's always on 10. And so I'm like, well, mom, just let the doctor, you know, like do what he's supposed to do. And so the doctor's like, no, she's too young. She probably doesn't have a blood clot. We're not going to test her for that. And my mom was like, please, sir, we have insurance. Please just run the test. You don't get paid. We paid this copay. She said, for the peace of my mind, please run the test. When he ran the test, he was like, okay, we're going to run the test. And you can go downstairs. We'll run the test. And then you can go home. Within 30 minutes, he calls and he's like, you have a blood clot in your lung. You need to turn around immediately and go to the hospital. We're admitting you immediately. Like, do not move a muscle. So if it had not been for my mom, who knows what would have happened that day. And my doctor was Caucasian, just to kind of, because I know that right now there's a lot of discussion about how minorities are treated in the medical, in the healthcare, right? So I say all that to say, it could really be life or death whether somebody advocates for you. Doctors do not always get it right. I saw on the news the other day, this woman was misdiagnosed 4 times and they told her she had a cyst in her breast. She had breast cancer. Had she been diagnosed earlier, her stage would be less. So now she has stage 4. Now, I don't know if that's medical malpractice. However,
because this would be blind. Like, that's the thing. And then who do you blame? Because if you are, like you said, Monique, first, second, third, or fourth opinion, well, then I don't know. I've heard that story. But I mean, the question is, you know, if I went to first opinion said cyst. Second doctor said cyst. Third said cyst. Finally, the fourth doctor come in talking about, oh, it's breast cancer, stage 4. Chemo can't help this. Then it's like, well, Shamira, like, so can I sue Dr. 1, 2, and 3? And is that
Dr. 1, 2, and 3? Now, granted, you need to have an expert review the files to see, you know, who and where and when the standard was breached. And I guess to prove that she had a higher percentage, like, chance of living at stage 1 or 2 or 3 than she did at stage 4. You know, of course, all of those things, but I've seen several cases where misdiagnosis between doctors 1, 2, and 3, and you can sue doctors 1, 2, and 3.
But I think
doctors 1, 2, and 3, empty your coins.
There's only so much coins that's there, though. That's the other thing that people don't realize when it comes to medical malpractice. But I think it's also an idea of, I lost my train of thought because someone texted me. So I'll be back later. Okay.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, I just personally believe if there's more than one condition that links to a common symptom, there should be more done to make sure that it's one over the other. And that's what I'm seeing. Right. Like, I hate when people are diagnosed with flu-like symptoms. That's like the worst. I can't stand seeing that on anything. And I guess I had this one case where a little boy comes in with flu-like symptoms and they run these tests. He doesn't test for flu at all. And the doctors miss meningitis. He loses hearing in both ears. You know what I mean? You can't reverse that, you know?
Right.
Now, unfortunately, in some cases, a doctor can run all the tests and do all they need to do. And a jury can find that they did everything that a normal doctor given the same set of facts would have done. So it really just depends on what your expert, who you hire, can say about the case and where they can weigh in. Like for a nurse, of course you would have a nurse review a nurse, but if it's a specific cardiac doctor, you would need that same level. So it's really the competency of the attorney in selecting an expert that fits the situation.
And it's so crazy. I was just going to say, it was so crazy that the doctor had said, you know, you're too young to, you know, get a PE. Like, no, you're not. anyone can get a PE, like, at any time. And so to go and not do that, and I think that's one thing that I think will be helpful for patients to do as well. Sometimes we say, oh, you know, the patients, they went to Dr. Google and, you know, you're looking up symptoms and you have like elbow cancer and you're calling and you're like, oh my God, go over crazy. But I think it's very good to go and look up these symptoms. So when you do go, you know what, you know, it could be the gallstones, which I don't really buy, but since I'm having this this pain and the shortness of breath, then possibly it could be a PE. Maybe that's something that you need to consider. So I always kind of advocate patients to, you know, you don't want to go overboard where you're like thinking you have everything. But if you do have symptoms and prior to going in, Google them to see what possibly can come up. And I'm so glad your mom went with you, which is another thing that I always advocate. Take somebody with you. I've had family members and friends, they'll go to the physicians and they'll have me on FaceTime. If they're out of state, they'll have me on the phone. My mother, like she calls me about everything. Like, you got to go come and talk to her nurse daughter before trying to do anything. But it's very good to have someone to come with you because they may ask questions or bring up concerns that you may not have thought about, or they may have had experience where they've seen it happen in someone else and they can bring it out. And I'm glad mama pushed for him to go ahead and do that, because doctors are human. They can be wrong. Nurses are human. They can be wrong. We make mistakes, you know, and the person that knows you best is you. You know, I can't tell you when you feel, you know, you're not feeling well. I can't tell you, you know what's going on with your body better than the physician does. That's not, and a lot of people automatically assume that the physician does, and they automatically will give it to the physician and say, you know, okay, whatever the doctor says. But no, like, if you know something is wrong, press them, because you know your body better than you. You know your family member better than your doctor. I know my mother when she's not feeling well. So the doctor comes and says, oh, you know, she's doing okay. No, she's not, because I've known her for all these years. And I know what's going on. So definitely speak up, and definitely I always advocate if possible. I know with Corona and everything that's going on right now, but put people on FaceTime, put them on the call, and just make sure you have somebody with you if you're not as comfortable, because I know some people are not as comfortable, especially like my grandparents or sometimes our parents, they're not really comfortable because what the doctor says is law, and it's like, no. You know, I feel like in our generation, we kind of question more a little bit, like, okay, so I don't have a PE, prove it to me. Show me where on the
scan. Has it been ruled out? Yeah.
Right. Oh, this is not, you know, that this is not going on. You don't think I have this? Prove it to me. Show me the lab work. Show me the scan. Show me the imaging that says that I don't have that. Because until you show that to me, I'm going to take that and go with it. And if you're not going to listen to me, I'm going to say it and yell it out until somebody does. Because you know.
And like Monique said, having someone there, that's an extra witness. You know, someone on your side. Right. Someone who has the facts with you.
I would say though, I want to show a little grace to the medical field. I think that sometimes people give lawyers a hard time, and they're always saying that we don't know what we're doing. But just like we always say, we're practicing law. So are physicians. They are practicing medicine. So every case, just like in the legal field, we've not seen every case. We have laws that show us what is a possible, and then we go and argue to figure out how this fits into our facts. But I feel that the medical books are the same thing. I see 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, don't get me wrong. I think some doctors do get lazy. They say she's young. It can't be that. But for some, I think that they are constantly practicing law. And so they are zealous, and they do want to find out what is going on. I mean, I know someone where they went in for one thing, and it totally wasn't that issue, but because they had a zealous doctor, the doctor kept running tests, and they found something that was so deep in the organs, it should never have been found until it became cancerous. But for the overzealous and them trying to just say, I want to solve this problem, they were able to find it. And so I think, you know, just like a lot of professions, people think that because you have certain titles and certain letters behind your name, that you have all the answers. We honestly don't. And some people, big egos will say they know everything. They do not. And you do need to question, whether it's your lawyers, your dentists, your eye doctors, your nurses or your doctors, question, because at the end of the day, it is your body and this is your one life that we're given. And so I think just questioning anybody is okay, with respect, of course, but just have some grace and know that they are still practicing law and practicing.
Yeah, medicine. And I would add to that really quickly. I'm sorry, Brandy. That all doctors are not, just like all lawyers are not created equal. All doctors are not created equal, and all doctors doesn't make them a bad doctor, but that may not be the right doctor for you. Because one thing that is very important is communication. And so I now have a team of doctors, right? And I can go in and we communicate very well. So since that time, I was able to look up, okay, so how do we detect a pulmonary embolism, right? So I told you I watched Grace. And so if I have a PE, I now can go in because I've had some since that time, right? And I have been able to go in and say, okay, first of all, when we're going to start me on Lovenox, okay, so are we going to do a CT scan or are you going to check my levels first to see, to rule some things out? I'm able to find out, okay, how do you test for these certain things and how are we able to rule them out? So if you go to your doctor and you say, you have a plan, like, I think I got cancer, and they can tell me, this is why, other than this is not your age. Like, if you can tell me, okay, looking at your labs, if you had this, then your labs would show this or be reflective of this. Let's take a look. Let's walk through. For me, that is better than just telling me, oh, I don't think you have it because people in your age don't have it. No. Well, we've done the lab work. Let's order the lab. Let's order the blood work. Let's order the biopsy or whatever we need to do. And let's rule some things out. So I think we have to, one, educate ourselves, and then two, find that healthcare provider that you're able to feel comfortable to communicate with. If I have a healthcare provider that gets very defensive when I'm questioning them, you're not the person for me. Right. You may be good for somebody else, but you're not for me. Because if I can't ask you questions, then
there's no need for me to come.
I have a little bit more going on. Now, my husband, he can go in, you tell him whatever, cool. You know, like, hey, you know, guys are easy peasy. But I think choosing the right healthcare professional is important as well when you're advocating for yourself.
So my thing about that is, though, that's great. But let's talk about, so that works, in my opinion, when you have a little bit more education behind you, or when you have somebody that's a little bit more educated. We have the resources, we have the tools to go research and, you know, ask those right questions. Like my example, my father was in the hospital for a heart attack, blood clot, things like that. And he was older, he was 70. And my mom was there, everything else. They had like a little education, but they kind of dismissed him because they was older. I come into town, because I live in Houston, I had to drive to Dallas. I come into town, nobody wants to have a conversation. Nobody wants to answer questions because I'm like, he had his surgery. He's still not up to par. He's supposed to be up to par. What's going on? What I also found out, for me, and I didn't want to do it because I don't like doing this, I had to tell them, explain to me what's going on, because I am only a lawyer. I'm not in the healthcare profession. So I don't know the medical terms. So break it down and talk to me. When I promised you, when I said lawyer, everybody's tone changed.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's tone changed. Everybody, yes. I'm talking about everybody's tone changed. I got every single thing. It was round clock, whatever. And I wasn't trying to do it, but I was to the point to where you were dismissing me. You are, you know, you're not trying to answer my questions. You're not trying to do anything. But now, and we couldn't get a hold of the doctor. He kept saying he had to go do other rounds. Oh, he miraculously appeared after that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, now you're
back. Because they said the nurse didn't call down. So his
lawyer. Oh, man. By the way, his daughter is a lawyer.
Right. That's how that went. Oh, everybody shouted. Like,
hold on. Let me, I got time today. Hold on. Clear my schedule.
But it worked for that in that situation. It worked because I have some type of education. But what about the ones, because we can talk all day long. Yes, you need to advocate for yourself. You need to go in there and do that. But the lower income, my clients that I deal with on a regular basis, you know, they don't really have access to the internet. They don't have access to, you know, medical books or even to watch Grey's Anatomy. So then how do we try to educate them and let them know, you know, you need to go in there. If that back pain is not right, go in there. And for them not to get turned away because they don't have health insurance. They ain't got good health insurance. So like, what would you recommend for them? Or when they come in, what do they need to do? Because they're the ones talking about, listen, you need to see me now.
Right.
Correct. Yes.
But I think it's really good as far as from just the community A lot of churches, they'll have people in the healthcare that work there, where they have programs where we're able to educate those in the community and let them know what to look for. And when I do have a patient that comes in that's a little more, you know, I don't have it on now, but usually I'll take off. I say, let me take off my badge. Let me talk to them. Like, listen, you know, real deal.
Right.
Not Monique the nerd. This is Mo, and I'm telling you. Right. And so that's where I feel like I contribute, because a lot of the patients that come in, they don't know. They don't know. They don't have the educational background. Their family, you know, doesn't know. And I really have to spend more time with them to let them know, like, listen, you may not know about these resources, but I'm letting you know. I'm really happy about even the social workers that I work with in lung transplant. They're African-American woman, and she's really like, okay, let me break it down to you and let you know. Because when you see someone who's in the community that doesn't have the same background as you, doesn't have the same education as you, I feel like it's my responsibility. I have this position. I'm not here just for me, but I'm here for not only my family and my friends, but also my community. I'm talking to my Black patients and letting them know, listen, this is how it's going to be. I'm not just educating you because you're just one of my patients, but I want to put you on the same level and let you know the same things that I'm letting other patients know. I want you to know the same resources that are available. So I really see it as myself, just being there for the community, being able to take off my badge and like, listen, this is little niece Monique, you know, this is big sister Monique. I want to let you know this. And just even with the community and the church members, I really try to get involved with the nursing staff at the church, so that we can educate those that are in a lower income and may not have that background or the resources, or just don't know what's going on. And I just take that as a personal responsibility.
So basically, they're a member of a Black church, because, you know, everybody got the nursing gill on at the church. So it's like, you know, kind of maybe, you know, if you got a good friend at the church, ask them to try to advocate for you as well. Yeah. I want to go
Sharia, in. Can your church members call you? You can advocate for them. You're going to come to the hospital.
I said nurses gill, but you know, you want to be
there. She said nurses gill. She didn't.
I ain't say lawyer. I got you, Korea. I got you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I do. I got you.
They can, and they will, and they always do. They have the number, the real number, right?
Well, you heard it first, guys. Call Taria. She'll be your advocate.
The NAACP has a free legal advice clinic every third Saturday as well. So a lot of people from the community who couldn't afford anything otherwise, you know what I mean, will come in for free legal advice. And a lot of times, because we are like, we have one of the greatest medical centers here, a lot of attorneys who practice medical malpractice will not charge a patient on the front end for free consultation.
Okay, I'm gonna ask that.
If they come in with those medical records and, you know, an attorney has like a staff physician they can shoot the records to and get them a quick answer, bring it on. You know, like just bring the records and allow someone to, you know, an expert to authenticate whatever they think happened. So it shouldn't cost them a thing.
We've been talking about this word throughout the whole entire recording, taping. So Shamir, I want you to explain this. What is medical malpractice? Because we've been throwing this word around. We all know what it is. But for the layperson listening to this, you know, they may have heard it on Grey's Anatomy, but really didn't know what it was. So what is medical malpractice?
So medical malpractice is where a healthcare professional or a facility breaches their duty of care, meaning they had some requirement in your care to do, and they failed to do it, and you were injured because of their failure or omission. Or they did something wrong, or they failed to do something that they were required to do, and you were injured because of it. That is medical malpractice. Now, if any one of those three things are missing, you know, not having a duty, there's no breach. There has to be like a link. Like if you're operating on my arm and my toe falls off, I would have to prove that surgery had something to do with my toe for me to recover from my toe. So there has to be some kind of link from the duty, the breach, to the harm. If there's no connection there, it's not medical malpractice. So it's where a healthcare professional or entity harms someone because of negligence.
So then if my toe fell off and you were supposed to work on my rotator cuff, but my toe, I'm over here, you know, I ain't got no toe, no foot, no nothing.
Of course. We need an expert to prove that because of your rotator cuff, it caused your toe to fall off. If we can't get an expert to back that up, if that's something that just is not connected to whatever the negligence is, you can't recover for it. So,
basically, what you're, the key word I keep hearing you saying is it has to connect.
It has to connect.
Because people fail to realize, you know, it doesn't, that connection is not there. And then they want $1 million and on the hospital. And it's like, no, that's not the connection.
I think you also need to say as well, not only connection, but medical malpractice cases are some of the most convoluted, complicated cases out there.
Absolutely.
And when you're saying you're getting these nurse experts, these physician experts for causation, they're expensive. And so everybody's case is not going to be taken, because if you only have a $5,000 damage when a nurse expert might cost you $15,000, you might not have a case that they're going to be willing to take and push all the way through because of the fees that are involved in such a case.
However, even if you can't get your case into a jury, you can always file a medical malpractice claim with the board.
Okay. You
know? So, and thank God we have Medicaid. They randomly, like for providers who provide for Medicare, Medicaid patients, they randomly select a bunch of files every year, read through them. If they find something without anyone starting anything, they'll go ahead and ensue those claims as well. So
then how do I go to the board? If not a claim for an attorney, like, you know, it is going to cost me more to get this case tried versus, you know, so it's not going to be worth it. Then how can I file a complaint with the board?
In Texas, go to the Texas Medical Board website. If it's a nurse, you know, Texas Nursing Board website, there's a therapist board website, dental board website, and you can make the complaint there. But also, just for everybody, you can look to see if your doctor already has some kind of violation as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'd hate to, the medical board, you can look it up. The
board, and you can look up their names and see what's on their history. I wasn't my client, co-defendant had several orthopedic surgeries where he operated on the wrong leg. And I'm just like, thank God he wasn't. I don't know. He wasn't my client. I'll say that. I represented another doctor. But, you know, I'd hate to have the knowledge that I can go and research them, seeing that and not back up from it. You know what I mean? So at least I'll do my due diligence by looking up every healthcare professional that I'm going to be associated with.
I mean, you know, that's like a lawyer. You look up and be like, oh, you got 12 grievances, one suspension, probation, and you better be this far. But you know, you can go take my case.
Now, I'm not saying it makes them a terrible doctor or anything like that.
Right.
No. But it at least gives me...
At least I know what I'm going into. Like, I may need to wear a sock on the foot I'm getting operated on. And tell him,
you know,
it's the pink sock. Operate on this leg. Okay?
Well, I want to make sure you know it's this leg right here.
Okay. It's this one.
Real quickly, how important, I know Monique, you mentioned a patient advocate authorization form, but how important is a power of attorney and like medical directives in HIPAA? And this is for both of y'all to answer, you know, when going to the hospital, going to the clinic, and will it even help a medical malpractice case?
It's definitely important to have that in place. You don't want to have something happen to you when you enter the hospital and now you're unable to make decisions and you didn't talk about that with your family beforehand. So it's definitely important to, before anything bad happens, to put in place the power of attorney, and also to make sure that you know whether you are a do not resuscitate or not, if you have a DNR in place or not, because I don't want to have to start trying to resuscitate you and doing chest compressions, and then your daughter no, but it is serious. And then your daughter comes
Monique
in.
Monique says she does not want to lay on top of you if you're ready to leave the planet.
I will, but I don't want to be, you know, doing all my good exercise and here come your daughter, you know, waving a DNR and I don't want to save your life. And so it's important to make sure that you have that on file and your power of attorney. People don't want to talk about it, but it's definitely very important. And the time to talk about it is now and not the time when we're surrounding around your bed and we need to make the decision and possibly call in ethics. That's not the time that we want to be doing that.
Mm-mm. That's true. And for everybody knows, a power of attorney is basically giving somebody permission to speak on your behalf if you are unable to during that time. So we are about to wrap up. This is the part of the show where we called Arrest My Case. So Rest My Case is whatever it is going on in your life, what you see in the news and the world or whatever, and you just be like, you know what? Y'all just need to leave it right where it's at. You know, leave it in 2019, leave it in 2020, leave it right here, right now. You know, let's let it go. So, Sam, we're going to start with us, and then we're going to go to our guests so y'all can get an idea what we mean by rest our case. So, Sam, you got to rest our case today?
Yes, I do. I would like to say for all the people who are enjoying the restaurants, the beach, okay, during this COVID-19 where there's still no vaccine or treatment, I would like for you not to go to the hospital if you get sick. Please, when the pneumonia lays into your chest and you can no longer breathe, stay at home or go to the beach. Go back to the beach. Go back to that restaurant. The people that aren't wearing masks, the people that aren't sanitizing, the people that aren't taking it seriously, please don't take up my bed if I happen to contract it going to my office and going home. Just stay at home. And Taria's church will pray for you. We will add you to the sick and shut-in list, and we hope that you work through it.
We add you to the sick and shut-in. We got Sister Grace praying for you, you know.
Don't show up to the hospital. Monique will not be incubating you and doing compressions when you were at the beach 2 days ago.
I will have your medical.
Like, don't be wasting Monique time. Don't waste your life. We'll show up later.
I'm going to piggyback on Sam. In addition to being out frolicking on the beach and enjoying those good old margaritas at the Mexican restaurant, don't complain when you are out of your $1,200 stimulus check because you were in line trying to get those new Jordans. Nobody feels bad for you. You didn't need
them. And they were not social distancing either.
They were not social distancing. And let me say another thing. You cannot complain about systemic disparities when you're using your money to purchase Jordans.
Last Dance came on Sunday, so I don't know.
Michael Jordan appreciates that you're letting his great-great-grandchildren have a future. Correct. He appreciates it so much. But can we put a little bit up in the bank? You're not getting another check, guys. That's it.
They did not approve that other check. That $2,000 a month did not get approved.
You're going back to work. The $600 unemployment is gone. Just to let you know. So I hope those Jordans can pay your bills.
Ladies, Shamira, rest my case.
Rest my case. Piggyback off of something we said earlier. Stop bringing these frivolous lawsuits, okay?
Say that. Say that louder. Say it with your chest.
Don't stop breathing. Stop bringing frivolous lawsuits.
We're going to have a whole nother episode about that one.
Right. Right. There. Right. Now, stop bringing the frivolous lawsuits just because Big Mama didn't take her medication and now she's back at the hospital. That's not medical malpractice.
They
don't have to take it.
And Monique, I wanted to make you last because as you are a healthcare professional, we do thank you for your services in this COVID time. So I want to give a quick shout out to my cousin, Rachel Linthicum. She's a social worker at Parkland Hospital in Dallas. She out there too. So when you said social workers, I'm like, yes, reach out to the social workers. They are in, they in there. But I want to, when you do your rescue case, I also want you to, if you can, quickly give us some quick tidbits because the governor has opened us up and we are back in, everybody, they tired of being in the house. They back in the street. So whatever advice you have for us to stay safe when we have to go to work and we're forced to go to work when we, you know, and things like that. So if you have any advice, you know, as a healthcare professional, we would love to hear that. Any quick tips?
Yeah, that's what I actually was going to do my rest of my case of things that I do want to see people doing. despite whatever the governor is saying, I think that patients, and this is the patient's people, this is the best way to be your best advocate, is to make sure that you stay safe. Okay, even if you still have to go back to work, you still need to be doing the social distancing. You still need to make sure that you are, you know, remaining safe, not only for you, but whoever that you're living with, you know, as well. And then another thing is just making sure your mental health. I don't work in mental health, but I did do a rotation through there, and it's very important. This time can be, you know, very depressing. People who may have already been loners, they're by themselves even more. Make sure that you take care of yourself, not only with washing hands and wearing masks, but also with just your mental status as well. I know we shouldn't be going to the beach, but if need be, you need to get out the apartment, take a walk around the block, you know, take some time to just enjoy, you know, your fresh air, and just the things that you enjoy doing. Make sure that you do that during this time. It's not going to be like this always, you know, but during this time, I do want people just to make sure that they take care of themselves and each other.
Thank y'all so much. And Monique, let everybody know where they can follow you on Instagram, Facebook. Yeah.
I'm on Instagram at Lovely Mo, LoveLy, the number one, the number seven, Lovely Mo 17. I'm not cool like everybody else. I don't have a Twitter or anything like that, but Lovely Mo 17 on Instagram.
And Ms. Shamira, thank you again for the great legal tidbits on malpractice. Tell everybody where they can follow you. If I need to hire you and sue somebody, you know, let them know all that good information.
I have a business attorney page on Instagram, attorney_Keener, K-E-E-N-E-R, on Instagram. And then if you just want to follow me on, you know, Facebook, it's Shamira L. Keener. Feel free to.
And if we want to, like, if anybody needs to hire you, or, you know, do you have a business number or anything that you want to give out, or we just follow me on social media?
Yeah, just follow me on social media or email me at shamirakeener@gmail.com.
Cool beans. Sam, are we following you today?
Y'all not following me nowhere because I'm social distancing. Y'all need to go on in the house.
Yeah. T. Hutch, back in the workforce streets.
Yes. Only like once or twice a week. So I'm
That's good.
So. Yeah. So I'm still at the house as well. If you follow me, I'm on my patio hanging out most days. but follow me as I'm washing my own hair, guys, because you shouldn't be getting your hair done either.
How about our weight loss journey? You know, we're trying to get you snatched. We still ready?
Follow me with Mean Green Training. We train every day. There can be like 10 workouts a day. I go at the 6 a.m. with my good trainer, Jason Miller, but I'm still inside my house.
Yeah.
Stay.
Also, if we have any eligible bachelors, please.
Yes.
DM us.
No.
We'll be sending
up. Monique.
Yes. Shamira, are you on the market as well? Because we're also a dating show.
I'm dollar bill single.
Dollar bill single. Yes.
Okay. So we have any eligible bachelors. You can send your inquiry as well as your social security number so we can run a credit check. you can send it to our podcast, because, you know, Brandy has Play Choose Date, so we can set y'all up on blind dates and we can bring y'all back.
Yes, through the speed dating side.
Yes.
But you can always follow me as long as you ain't creating no, my page is private now, so you can't be creating no fake pages. I had to make it private. But you can still follow me at Brand_Janae. And you can follow us on social media, all the social media platforms, No Further Questions, Facebook page, No Further Q on Instagram, and NFQ on Twitter. So follow us, share, like, you know, our numbers looking good. Thank y'all for the faithful supporters, followers that's been listening to us during the quarantine chronicles. We really appreciate y'all. And we are out. See y'all next time.